All right, what's up, y'all? Kevin Kuhn here from Athlete Factors. This is the Athlete Factors podcast. I'm here with good friend, old friend, Garson Skelton. What's up, G?
What's going on, man?
Just living the dream. So, let's see where to begin. We met back in 2009, grad school at Baylor. Yep. I'm just bringing on everybody that I went to. I just did one with Adam Ross, so that one's going up soon. But yeah, I'm just going through the list. So I think there's not too many of us who work with high school athletes or who have worked with high school athletes. So I really enjoy, you know, hearing your perspective on that topic just because that's your jam. That's your thing.
That's what I do.
Perfect. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do exactly. And
like you said, went to Baylor. I was there for a long time. I did my undergrad and master's there. And then after that, spent, you know, a little bit of time. I did an internship at U of H, then got in the private sector, did some personal training, did, you know, corporate fitness, lifetime athletic, and then kind of a smaller, like, you know, I always call it like mom and pop, but, you know, like a smaller, just that focused. It did a lot of things. It was actually a really cool place. But, you know, I worked with the high school kids there, and then got hired on at Santa Fe for a year, and then moved to Harker Heights, where now I'm going into my 6th year as a strength and conditioning coach. Where I work with all of the sports on campus. And really it's just, you know, trying to make kids the best athletes they can be, and hopefully teaching them, lifting habits and exercise habits that they'll continue on throughout the high school, throughout their college and the rest of their lives. 'Cause, you know, I remember working out in college and you ask somebody like, hey, what lift are you doing? And, you know, like, oh, I'm just doing something I did, you know, back in high school, or I'm doing my old football lift or my old like track lift that we used to do. And, mm-hmm. you know, so to me, it's exciting because if, you know, not everybody's going to play in college, but most everybody's going to want to be healthy and work out and exercise. And if you can teach them habits along the way, it's pretty exciting. And to hear back from guys that I've trained and athletes that I've trained and like, hey, like I remember doing this with you and you showed me this. And it's funny. I got one kid I used to train at personal trained him and started in middle school. And he's actually at Baylor now. I brainwashed him, I guess. And he's like, like he was super skinny kid. And now like, he's like getting into powerlifting and, I was talking to him the other day and I was like, dude, like I'm so proud of like the lifter you've become because like he was scrawny, but he was always excited about lifting and, you know, Olympic lifting. And he went the other way with powerlifting, but yeah, it's just like, dude, you're legit stronger than me now. Like, I don't know how to handle that. Like, you were the scrawny little like redhead, like you, yeah. And now you're just throwing up some massive weight. So yeah, it's exciting.
The student becomes the master.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So tell us a little bit about maybe something that's happened recently in your personal life.
Well, I just got married.
Congrats.
Just got married. So it's very exciting. You know, long time coming, drug my feet a little bit, but it's been great. So we had a real small ceremony and then we were selfish, didn't want to spend money on other people and a ceremony and service, but we spent a lot of money on a honeymoon. And
nice.
You know, that was what we wanted to do is, you know, we wanted to be able to travel together and focus on that and start our new life together, building memories. So we went to London, Scotland, and then Athens, and then it was a lot of fun. So probably what you're getting at is the stones, my stone lifting, which you helped me with big time. So I watched it I can't remember when I watched it or when I first watched it, but the Stoneland documentary, Rogue, it's on Netflix, or you can YouTube it. It's the series on Netflix is Strongland. The episode is Stoneland. But I remember watching it, and I've always wanted to go to Scotland. Always wanted to go, you know, see it. And then I just remember watching that episode, and I was like, man, that's awesome. It'd be really cool to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we started talking about our honeymoon plans and kind of like, well, geez, if we're going to be in Scotland, maybe this can happen. And so for those, everybody that doesn't know, I guess, let me back up. So the idea is in Scotland, there's the Scottish Stones of Strength, and there's stones all over Scotland that, you know, throughout the years and ages, you know, they were tests of manhood, or if you wanted to be chieftain, you know, of your clan, it was, you know, hey, who could lift it? You know, you had to be able to lift a stone or carry it 10 paces to be seen as a man or in this clan. And that was like your rite of passage. So there's a bunch of them. I kind of targeted a few that I wanted to do that I thought I could do. And the main one, though, is the Inver Stone. And it's really cool. It's a 265-pound stone. It's kept by an old lady, June Richards. She's the keeper of the stone. Her family's kept it since like the 40s. Wow. And she's got a guest book that if you lift the stone, you get to sign your name in the guest book. And that was like, that became kind of the driving force. I wanted to be in the book. You know, I want to sign the book. And kind of be a part of history, because like you flip through it and you read through it, and it's like there's a lot of like World's Strongest Men and like strongman competitors, and it's like I've heard of that guy before, like, you mm-hmm. know, it's really cool to be in something that like that, and because I don't consider myself very strong, but to be able to do that and be a part of that is pretty exciting. So
for sure.
Yeah
it's a small group.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was exciting, and you know, it was like, I kept telling myself, like, sign the book, be a part of history, sign the book, let's go. started training for that, like, seriously, back probably in December, especially when the plans were starting to come together, you know, big time, getting after it. A friend, David Accardo, made some stones. He has some Atlas stone molds, and he made some for me, and kind of gave me the pointers and some virtual coaching. Me and him kind of would go back and forth, and even took a trip to a rock yard down outside of Houston, and it was like a landscaping place, and you know, just the big like rocks, and we'd go up and like, you know, explain that like, we don't want to buy anything. We just want to pick your stuff up and put it down. You know, so and a couple guys are just like, you know, everybody was really cool about it. They're just like, what are you doing? Like, you want to do what? So, you know, we just block them out and we're just doing our stuff and lifting these, you know, the landscaping rocks, and they'd come over and ask us questions. And when they kind of like figured out we were legit, like, well, we got some bigger ones over here. We got some that, you know, you guys should try these. And it was just funny because, you know, it's like we would walk around and the guys that work there are like, dude, we've got forklifts. Like, you know, like we've got tools. Like, I don't know. It was just funny. Like, you guys are doing this for fun? Like, my back is killing me. But yeah. So, yeah. You know, worked with some Atlas stones, did some, you know, natural stone training, and then kind of developed a plan, a training plan around what I was going to be doing. You know, did a lot of deficit deadlift, like tried to get the bar right over my feet because basically pulling off the ground. Mm-hmm. Tried to modify a lot of my lifts to where, you know, I was hands inside. You know, when I would deadlift, it was hands inside. Mm-hmm. You know, not a sumo grip, but, you know, pretty narrow. When I was squatting, I was trying to stay narrow, mm-hmm. with my feet narrower than I really like. And then, you know, got a hold of you trying to help me with my nutrition, and trying to kind of get that thing going. Cause you've kind of become my nutrition guy. I just go to you. It's like, you're smarter than I am, so I'll just use you.
Thanks.
You know, and I think you had started telling me you were working on a book about macros and calorie counting, and it honestly was a huge help until I kind of freaked out about it. So I was seeing great results. You know, I was hitting all my numbers that you gave me, and I was doing great, and I was losing weight and seeing results. And, you know, it wasn't drastic, but, you know, steadily losing a pound here, and inches were coming off the waistline, and I was feeling good. And then I still remember, I don't know what happened. A spring break. It was right after spring break. I've got a 255 Atlas Stone. And, you know, I lifted it, chested it. And I was like, man, like, this is awesome. Like, this is, you know, I've still got another 2.5 months. Like, I just chested it. Like, things are going well. I never chested it again. Like, I don't know. It was like a mental block. Like, I was struggling to pull it off the ground. I just couldn't do it. And, you know, that was, I kind of told you, you know, that's when I started telling you, like, man, like, it's working, but I'm also freaking out because I'm losing weight. Like, and I'm going to keep my protein levels where they are, but I'm just going to eat because I've got one shot at Scotland. You know, I can come back and lose weight, which has not been going well, but, but you know, like I've got to make sure that I'm not killing my strength numbers. And, you know, like, yeah, I don't know what it was. I never chested that stone again. And you know, I did some, you know, a stupid birthday lift when I on my birthday, and I did like the stone. I did one of my stones 32 times. And that was brutal. But it was also a big confidence boost, 'cause it was like, all right, if I can do that 32 times, like, and it was only a 150-pound stone, but, you know, it kind of like reaffirmed that I was able to do this. And, but yeah, man, I panicked big time, like big time self doubt. And like I said, I don't know what it was. But it started getting in my head, like, geez, what if I don't get this? Like, and then I just kind of started shutting that out. And, you know, we got over there, and, fortunately driving in Scotland is absolutely terrifying. So it kept me distracted the morning of.
Why is it frightening?
It's, well, first of all, the steering wheel's on the wrong side of the car, and then you're on the wrong side of the road. the lanes are like, the narrow? Lanes are narrower there than they are here. Like, it's terrifying. And trying to leave Edinburgh in morning rush hour traffic was, you know, I was telling somebody, it's like, the best way I could describe it is like playing a video game that you've played for years, and then somebody changes the controls on you. Like, you know what to do, but it just takes you a second to process. So like every intersection, Ashley posted a video, and I'm just like, keep to the right, keep to the right, or keep to the left, keep to the left, keep to the left, keep to the left. 'Cause it was like, I'd get to an intersection and, you know, taking a right turn, you normally you just, it's right there. You say the right. Well, it's like, oh, I've got to come all the way out. And it just, you know, that was stressful. And then, so we get out into the Highlands and we're driving and it was beautiful. And, we get out there and, you know, we stop and take pictures and do all the, you know, touristy Americans in another country, honeymoon stuff, like, oh, this is amazing, this is beautiful. And we keep going and I'm watching and I'm watching the GPS mileage kick in. It's like 15 minutes and there's like something, we drive by something. She's like, oh, okay, hey, can we stop and take pictures? And I'm just a bundle of nerves. Like, I can't, like, at this point, like, it's, I'm like freaking out. And I was just like, babe, I love you. Can we just get to the stone? I got, we will stop. I can stop where, we'll stop wherever you want.
Come back.
I'll do whatever you want to do. We'll stop wherever you want to stop. Stop, just please. Can we just get to the stone? And she was, I think that was when she realized like how much like it was bothering me. Like, because I was trying to stay calm. But I tell you, like, I was a bundle of nerves. Like, I had nothing I've ever experienced before. And, And we pull up, and I mean, I watched the show, like I've been on satellite view, like street view, like spun around because I wanted to know exactly what to look for, and mm-hmm. and I wanted to be prepped and you know, visualize. I wanted to be able to visualize as much as I could, you know, and when we were walking in London a few days before, like we had to walk to our underground, the tube station and stuff. And when we were walking, it was just the whole time I was visualizing, like walking up to the stone, like what it was going to feel like, what, you know, what it was going to be like gripping it and every little thing detail I could come up with. Cause I just, I didn't want to think about not being able to get it. And, really cool. My friend, you met him, David Accardo, he actually he was there like a week and a half before I was, so he beat me to it. But he, you know, he said like, dude, it's awesome. Like when you get there and you actually touch the stone, it's like a quiet electricity that like, you know, you think about the history and the people that lifted, and it's just, it just gets you jacked. Like no amount of like pre-workout or caffeine has ever done before. And
yeah.
And we pull up and I start walking up and I feel it and I see it. And he was right. Like, you know, when I first gripped it, I was just like, holy crap, this is happening. This is go time. And, mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I didn't get it on my first couple attempts, you know, but like I pulled it from the ground and separated. And then it kind of slipped and I was like, I can do this. Like, I know mm-hmm. I can. And that was what sealed it. And, I was able to chest it and get it, you know, stand up with it. And you know, I tried a couple more times because I wanted to try to shoulder it, but mm-hmm. It wasn't. I was spent, and you know, I think the nervous energy got to me, and then also, it's so wide. It's wider than what I had been training with. So, you know, Atlas stones are perfectly sphere. Well, this is more like a football basically, and I couldn't get it around. So, but you know, I did it. I was happy
I tested it,
and then. I think it ended up being like 8 hours later, driving all around Scotland, went to the Dalwhinnie Stone, and I did shoulder the Dalwhinnie Stone, which was a lot of fun and really cool. So,
yeah. Did you get a little scotch there? Or?
A little bit. Good. A little bit.
Glad to hear that.
I was worried about the weight limit in my checked bag on the way back home, but managed. It arrived safely, so
nice.
Yeah,
nice. Did you pull around Swanson and go up to Lagavulin, or
it was too far?
Yeah, it's a ways away, man.
It's way on the far side, you know, on the west side of Scotland, and we were going kind of northeast, and we went all the way to the northeast side of it, and I looked. But wasn't able to Ron Swanson it as much as I wanted to. But yeah, it's an excuse to go back. So
for sure.
And that was one thing. It was cool. We got there and we're like, oh, we messed up. We need more time here. So
yeah, so much to see and do for sure.
Yeah. It was cool. And that was, you know, something though. We went to Athens as well, and you know, got to see the stadium of Pythia at the Delphi temple or whatever. And that was really cool too, because, you know, that's one of the original like track and field places, you know, like, you know, I took some pictures and read some stuff, and it was like, you know, talking about how they would run sprints, and it was like 178 meters long, and, you know, guys would sprint it, and, you know, I forgot who it was, but they built the stadium, or they built the bleachers basically for judges to come in and, you know, watch the races. And it was like they would run one, they had an event where it was like a down and back. They would suit everybody, they'd give them like armor and a shield, and they'd have to run a race. And then the one that surprised me was like, it was like 24, it was like 24 rep, like down and back, like 24 times. Good Lord. Well, like that's
skinny just, guys need an event too, bro.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, just it's like, it's great, but you know, and it's on top of a mountain. So like just getting up to the actual stadium was a workout for me. Like I was exhausted because it was like straight up, and I was like, yeah, I'm good just getting up here. I couldn't imagine getting up here and then running and trying to compete. But yeah, it was really cool to see and just, you know, like this is where I guess it would be the Pythian Games would be because it wouldn't be the Olympic Games, but the Pythian Games. So it was cool, man. It just, you know, the history of athletics and got to experience some of that on the trip.
Yeah, all the serious competitions were started right there. So that's really cool. Yeah, a couple of things that I thought of kind of when you were explaining your prep, your training leading up to it, that I think is a really valuable lesson for people. You can train for optimal performance and use nutrition strategies to do that, or you can train for aesthetics.
Yeah.
And it's basically impossible to do both. So, you know, when we had started talking about, you know, trying to figure this out, the goal was, hey, I want to look good because I'm getting married.
Right.
And I also want to lift these stones. And I was like, okay, all right, well, let's see how long we can keep those goals parallel. Like, right next to each other, but at some point we've got to, if the calorie deficit starts to hurt your training, then we've got to reevaluate what's more important at that point. So I think it was good. You got to the point where you're like, hey, like this feeling good, looking good. And now I've got to do this.
Yeah. And really, like, I probably could have kept in the deficit a little bit longer with the calories. Like I said, I got to that point where, you know, it was like a mental like wall basically. And cause I know I was getting stronger. Like, you know, I was in the weight room when I was doing some barbell stuff, like my lifts were getting better. I was bumping my weights up. I was bumping the reps up, you know, and then the lifts with stones were getting easier. And, you know, I was doing like sets of like, you know, started with doing sets of three and like doing like squats with the stone. And then I bumped it up to sets of five. And so like everything was getting easier and easier. And then, but every time it was just like that one stupid stone that was like 255, that was, you know, 10 pounds less. And it was like, every time I would go to, and I kept like, oh, well, it's cause I've already worked out. Like I keep trying at the end of the workout. And then, you know, I would go and try again. And it was just like a mental block. And I was just like, all right, well, screw it. I'm just going to carb up and see what happens. I was just trying to eliminate things to try to reassure myself that like, hey, this is working. Cause you know, part of, you know, you say you can train, you can, you know, there's performance and eating for performance and eating for aesthetics. And one thing, and I read it a long time ago, and it was Mark Twite from Jim Jones. He said it, and it was kind of along the lines of like, if you train for horsepower, the aesthetics will follow. Like, and I buy into that, and I believe it. Like, you look at any professional athlete, and you're not gonna be like, oh, that guy's a slub, you know? Like, oh, who, you know, they're rocked up. They, you know, it's how you want to look, but they train for performance. And the other example I use, and when I'm trying to convince my athletes and my kids about that, like, cause they'll come in and tell me like, oh yeah, coach, I'm not eating carbs, or I'm doing this. I'm like, okay, stop. And I was like, train for horsepower. And I was like, think of any car you want. Like if it's a high horsepower car, it probably looks pretty cool on the outside. Like, you know, and I tell them, like, hey, name a sports car. Like, name a car that you think is super fast. And they'll throw something out, and it's like, it looks kind of badass, doesn't it? And they're like, well, yeah, it's a Ferrari. And I'm like, yeah, it's because it's made to be a performance. It's like, it's made to perform. It's got an engine. It's got horsepower. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's not a Ford Pinto. Like, it's not, you know, nobody wants a Pinto's horsepower. Like, it's just, that's how it is. And, you know. Yeah. Some of them are like, oh, yeah, coach, yeah. Yeah, and then it's like I see them eating, like, lettuce wraps later on and still going low carb. But what do I know? But,
what do you know?
But, you know, it's one of those things. And But yeah, you know, it was eye opening to me, like the amount of calories you were telling me to eat, like, and the protein was a struggle because, you know, 1 gram per pound of body weight, and my body weight's up there. So, trying to hit like 250 grams of protein was rough. And I was just like, holy crap, like this is a lot of food. And Ashley was watching me like, why don't you just eat less? Like you'll lose more weight. Like, and I was like, yes, I know you are right. That's I true. Am, but I'm trying to do a thing and, you know, like hitting my carb count. And like, there was some day, like, especially early on, like hitting my carb levels, like I was just like, I didn't realize how low carb I was eating kind of day to day. You know, Monday through Friday, like I'm usually pretty good, you know, weekends all bets are off when I was before this. But, you know, when I started tracking my calories, it was like, man, like I'm not eating anything. And then, you know, started hitting the calorie. I think you had me close to 4,000 calories when we started, and weight was dropped. My weight was still dropping and like inches were coming off my waistline. And I was like, yeah, tracking calories is a pain in the ass, but also like being able to eat 4,000, almost 4,000 calories or 3,500 calories a day is, and see results is pretty nice too. Like,
yeah,
you know, like Ashley would walk through and I'm like eating a Pop Tart and she's like, what are you doing? I thought you were in. I was like, I gotta hit my carbs. Like, well, shouldn't you eat something healthier? Like, probably, but my carbs.
Gotta hit my numbers.
Yeah.
It's science.
Yeah. What Evan said. It's working. It's out.
So, yeah, that's what's crazy is when you are fueling appropriately, you have a much more potent training stimulus, which means you need a more profound recovery stimulus. So like you can eat more.
Right.
Because it now you're creating more of a let's say nutrient debt that you have to pay, and when you pay that, then the body's like, oh, I know what to do with this.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it, you know, and it's funny. Like I was trying to explain to some of my athletes, my softball players, like yesterday, were asking me like, coach, like I want to lose, you know, I want to drop some body fat, and like what kind of like what do I need to eat? Like what are foods I should eat? And I was like, all right, I'm not trying to be a smartass, but literally, as long as you burn more than you are eating, you will lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, so like a lot of salads? And I'm like, just don't eat more than you're burning. Like, it doesn't matter. And they're like, so like paleo? I'm like, no, like it doesn't matter. Like, if you, and I tell them, like, because I guess I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. It's like, download like MyFitnessPal and see how well you can track your calories.
Mm-hmm.
If you track your calories over a period of time, like you will see what you're eating and what you need to fit. Like just doing that alone, whether you've talked to somebody or not, like and you're on a plan, like just look at what you're doing and you can figure out like, oh damn, I went to Wendy's two times yesterday. Like, yeah, like that's not good.
Yeah.
But you know, and obviously if you do things, you eat more vegetables and more like the traditional like clean foods or good foods or whatever, it's you'll probably see better results, but then you're still going to struggle. If you're training for performance, you're still going to struggle to hit those numbers that are going to keep you from killing your gains, for lack of a better term. And and you know, it's just funny because like I said, like I want to shake some of my athletes, and it's I feel bad because it's, you know, there's so much misinformation, and, you know, you and Mandy were talking about this, and y'all's is just the Instagram influencer, you know, but that's our profession in general, whether it's nutrition or performance training, it's, you know, the speed ladder king, whatever, who does like some super awesome looking drills. Well, that's what I want to do. Like, why is that going to help you be a better like athlete? But you know, well, he looks cool.
Because you can record me and then I can put it on my Instagram and then I'm going to get thousands of likes.
Yeah.
Well, that's really awesome that your feet move fast.
Right.
But it's not helping.
I'm jumping topics, but staying with the nutrition thing for right now, it was eye-opening to see how much food I could eat that I could actually like lose weight while eating that much, as long as I paid attention and dialed in to what I was eating. And, you know, calories in, calories out is stupid and blah, blah, blah. Tracking calories is tedious. Like, yeah, it is, but it's tedious, but it works.
Yeah.
And the hard part of tracking calories is tracking calories. But once you get in the habit of that, it's like, you can eat whatever you want. Like, just plan ahead, you know, like, yep. I think I told you a couple times, it was like, oh, like I kind of doing low carb, you know, in the morning because we're going to see a movie later and, you know, I want to be able to enjoy it and not worry about it. And yes, is popcorn and a Coke the best thing for me? But probably not. But if I planned ahead for it and I'm still hitting my deficit, then I'm going to get where I need to be. Now it's not going to help me hydration wise or anything like that. You have to compensate for that too. But, you know, it's just, it's finding that balance and I try to remind myself that, like, look, I'm 32, I've got 2 degrees in this and I know what I'm doing. Yeah. My high school kids aren't going to understand it either. Like, you know, like I had to go to you for help to help me realize it, you know, and it takes time to get them to realize, you know, I had one kid, coach, I want to get bigger. I've been, you know, we've been working out forever and I haven't gotten any bigger. I haven't gained any weight. Like, that's why I'm training in the morning and I'm doing, he was coming to my workouts in the afternoon. He was going to another trainer in the morning and he was doing like a position skill. So he's doing like 3 days. I was like, well, if you want to get bigger, you need to eat. What have you eaten today? I had a chicken breast and like a serving of broccoli. Okay. It's 3:30. In the afternoon. That's all you've eaten today? Yeah. And you went with this other trainer and then you trained with me and you're getting ready to go to your skills coach or whatever and you've had a chicken breast. Like, dude, it doesn't matter how much you train, you're not going to gain weight.
Yep.
And he was like, well, what do I need to eat? And I was like, dude, peanut butter and jelly, it doesn't matter. I was like, just start eating. He's like, oh, so I can eat pizza. It's like, yes, you can eat pizza. Like, dude, you have a six pack. Like, you're ripped up. You're a high school football player that is working out
three times a day.
I just need you to work out an hour and 45 minutes with me. That's more than enough. But
yeah,
dude, you should not stop eating and you'll still be lean and put, well, I just don't have food in the house like that. Well, how much does your other personal trainer cost? Oh, $200 a month. Well, dude, there's $50 a week for food. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm $40 for the summer. Like, that's what our school program costs. Like, you get 8 weeks for $40 with me. Like, take the $20 and go buy eggs. Go buy, you know,
peanut butter, a five pound
bag of rice or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you can find cheap foods. And it was like, oh, yeah, I guess I could spend my money on that. And it's like, yeah, that's all you need. Like, working out more is not going to help you gain weight if you're not eating. So,
yeah. In fact, this is the crazy one. The more you work out, the more calories you burn.
Yes.
The more you're in a calorie deficit, the more you're catabolic, the more he's actually breaking down. Right. So the more you're in a calorie deficit, the harder it is to maintain muscle mass, let alone increase muscle mass. So, yeah, that's one of those things, but
well, like I started using your, it was something I stole from you and it makes it really easy. Like, you know, when parents and kids ask me, I was like, it doesn't matter what you do. The first thing you got to do is make sure you're getting enough calories. That's goal number one. Nothing else matters until you're getting enough calories, the appropriate amount of calories. Once you get that figured out, then start looking at the appropriate amount of protein. Because that's going to help you with lean muscle mass and staying where you are. And so once you're getting enough, the appropriate amount of calories, once you're getting enough protein, then worry about everything else. Then worry about your fruits and vegetables and figuring that out. But every single time you have to run through this checklist. Am I getting enough calories? Then am I getting enough protein? And then, you know, mom and dad don't like this as much, then am I getting enough fruits and vegetables and stuff? But, you know, the fruits and veggies are good for you, yes, but they're pretty low. A lot of times they're low calorie, and if you're trying to keep weight on and be a high performing athlete, you just need more calories. So.
Yep. Yeah. The more that I learn about nutrition, because, you know, I don't know it all yet. the more I realize.
Pretty good.
I'm trying.
But, you know, and a lot of times it's like the more that I learn about it too, and the more I pick up from like you and I see Mandy post stuff and Lane Norton, and it's like the more you learn, kind of the simpler it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, you know, because that was a big thing. Like, you can eat to be healthy or you can eat to lose weight, and they're not they don't always have to go hand in hand. Like, you can eat to lose weight and be really, really unhealthy.
Yeah.
And you can eat to be healthy and not lose any weight. But it's like, at the end of the day, most people are pretty smart. If you're slamming a double water burger with extra cheese and bacon, like, you know that's not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, we kind of choose to ignore that sometimes. But it's,
yeah,
not to devalue a lot of what the research and stuff is going on, but like, for most people, it's like, it's kind of simple. Just eat, you know, burn more than what you eat.
Yeah,
I'm saying that right. So
yeah, like that's what's crazy. Like, because I think about this a lot. Like, what's better for you, being in a calorie surplus and eating like the quote unquote healthiest food that we know of, where you're gaining weight and you're gaining fat mass, right?
Yeah.
Is that healthier, or is it healthier to eat relatively unhealthy food but hit your calorie goal so that you're in a deficit? And then hit your protein goal so that you're maintaining lean tissue mass, and then hitting your fat goal so that you actually have substrate for your hormones to like build and function, and then hitting your carb goal so that you can actually, you know, fuel effectively. And I'm like, like, the research is pretty clear. You can do any diet you want, and as long as you're in a calorie deficit, your health markers are going to improve.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're like this, I have to eat clean zealot, but you're in a calorie surplus, you're actually doing your body a disservice than if you were eating quote unquote unhealthy foods, but you're in a calorie deficit. And I know like people are going to not like hearing that, because it's like, like, I know people who are just going to argue with me and be like, no. Like, you need to eat clean. Like, okay, well then what do you do? Like, I heard this from Lane Norton, and it cracks me up every time I hear it, because he's like, okay, you're eating clean, you're not tracking your calories. What do you do when your progress plateaus? Do you eat cleaner?
Yeah.
You're already like,
well,
what do you do? Like, you can't eat cleaner if you're already eating clean. So. Yeah.
Well, I read something that he posted, and he was like, since when did foods become good and bad? Like, when did we start applying ethics to our broccoli?
Yeah, food, like, morality.
What, yeah, that's what it is, food morality. Yeah. But psychologically too, though, it to me, it was easier a lot of times. Like, if I know I've got to slam like grilled chicken and broccoli three times a day to lose weight, like, it, screw it. Like, it's not worth it. Like,
it's not appealing.
I like barbecue more than I like abs. but you know, being able to like, you know, at the end of the day or at night, if I had some calories left over, like, hey, like, I'm going to get some ice cream or something, or I'm not going to stress about eating my seventh cup of steamed veggies. You know, it made it easier, and it made it easier to like focus on other things like life and training. And, you know, that another thing my kids always ask is like, coach, like, will you write me a diet plan? It's like, no, they don't work. Like, I'll teach you how to eat. And if you do a food log for me, I'll go over like, hey, this was a good day, this was a bad day, you know, or hey, maybe we should look at this or that. But it's like, diet plans don't work, because, you know, or food plans where it's like, hey, at 9 a.m. you have to eat this. And then at 11 or at 12 p.m. or at 12 p.m. you have to eat this. Well, what happens if you don't eat at night? You don't eat that 9 o'clock meal because you get busy and life happens. Mm-hmm. And now it's 11 o'clock. Well, do you eat the 9 o'clock meal, even though you're an hour away from the 12 o'clock meal? Or so it's like, you just have to learn how to eat. And, you know, I wish more kids would take me up on it where they would actually track what they eat. And I was like, look, I don't need detail. I need what you ate and what time. And then we can start piecing together a plan from that. And, but even that's hard, you know, even that's hard to do. It takes time and discipline. And, you know, it's the hour that the athletes are with me is, that's the easy part is what I tell them. The hard part is when you leave the coach or whoever you, the trainer or your coach or whoever, that's the hard part.
Yeah, now the other 22 and a half hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. That's for sure. So, yeah, what was I thinking? Oh, so that was one of the things that I was thinking of. Like, the more that I learn about this, the more I understand that, like, everybody's so focused on, like, should I do this diet? Should I do that diet? Like, almost every single differentiation between diets comes down to, this is a broad generalization, but it's mostly true. It's you either adjust your fat or you adjust your carbs. And that's, in my opinion, priority number 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter until you're hitting your calories and you're hitting your protein, because no diet will be effective if you're not hitting an appropriate calorie goal, and you won't be able to train intensely and repair unless you're hitting an appropriate protein goal. So nothing's going to be sustainable. You won't be able to either maintain your increase in muscle mass or maintain your decrease in fat mass unless you're hitting your first two priorities. So figure that out. And then from there, pick whatever diet you want. And you can eat paleo. You can do intermittent fasting. You can do this. You can do that. You can go low carb. You can go vegan. Whatever you want.
Yeah,
but you have to
find the one you can stick with. Like,
exactly. You know, but you have to hit those two priorities.
Yeah.
Calories and protein first, in order for it to, in order for you to 6 months down the road not be in a position where you're like, I guess I should start that up again and see what happens over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks. Yeah. Or 10 days. Or, you know what? Those 3 days were awful. I'm not going to do it again. Yeah. Like,
diet starts on Monday. It's like, dude, it's Tuesday. Well, you know, Monday though.
Well, Wednesday. I've got a stressful week and I can't start now.
Like, yeah, it's Tuesday. You can't start a diet on a Tuesday, but you know. But then it's Taco Tuesday, so you know, I get Monday in, and then you know, you got to go hit up Taco Tuesday. So
yeah. The diet starts and ends Monday.
Yeah,
exactly. Every Monday. If that's sustainable. Then go. No, I'm just kidding. So, it's good stuff. So, one of the things about the stones that I think is really important. Having never lifted a large stone, I don't know this for a fact, but it's an assumption that I'm making. With all these famous stones, everyone's like a different size and shape and weight. Like, how do you like, you can train for a deadlift because you know, like, you have I've got the implement. I have the bar, right? So even when you're training with traditional weightlifting equipment and then the Atlas stones that you had made, like, that's still not the same as the individual stone that you're going to lift. So how do you best prepare for something that, like, you've never seen it physically in front of you before, and then you step up to it and you're like, all right, do you have like a strategy in mind? Like, okay, like, because it's this shape, like, do you know enough about these stones to know, like, all right, this is what most people do here, so I'm gonna, you know, follow that strategy? Or like, you're just like, hey, there it is, I'm just gonna pick it up.
So let me start by saying, like, I am far from an expert on stone lifting. Like, I've lifted two. Okay. I am far from it. But you know, to answer your question, I mean, that's that's what we do as strength coaches. That's what we do as trainers, is we are preparing for something that we don't have all the answers for. We have a pretty good idea, mm-hmm. but unless it's the sport of powerlifting or Olympic lifting, we don't know exactly what we're going up against. And we don't, you know, when we train our, you know, your athletes or your clients, like you don't know. And, you know, I don't know exactly what my football team is going. I have a good idea, but I don't know exactly what's going to happen to them on every single play. Like mm-hmm. I understand the demands of the sport, but you can't plan for it 100% of the time. So it's just kind of what we do. And, you know, it's, I was telling, we had a kid moved in and his dad was asking me, you know, what's your training philosophy and what do you believe in? And it's like, well, I like the clean, you know, we'll test on clean squat and bench. Those are our three main lifts. But at the end of the day, I don't really care. Like, I care because I want to see you progress. I want to be able to track your progress and I want mm-hmm. you to get excited and feel stronger. But we're never taking a barbell out to the middle of the football field and out benching somebody to win a game. It's a means to an end. So mm-hmm. we're going to squat to be able to put force into the ground better and to absorb, you know, and to generate force. And we're going to bench to be able to extend our arms and do all this stuff. But none of those lifts or exercises are really anything like what we're doing. Even the bench press, mm-hmm. you know, when we bench, we're pushing into something and our back is braced. Well, the only time you're actually doing that in a sport is if somebody's laying on top of you and you're on the ground and pushing them up. Like, otherwise you're standing upright and you have to brace your abs and you're pushing through the ground. So even the bench press, you know, it's like not a direct transfer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said earlier, I had the stones, I had the Alice stones made and they're perfectly round. Well, the stones that the original stones that I picked out were roundish. They were more spherical in shape. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I picked them, because I was, you know, hedging my bets and trying to plan for success. But, you know, and then it was like I said, it was when I would do barbell lifts, it was like, all right, like I'm going to bring my feet in closer because, you know, when the stone, when you lap a stone, you've got to be able to build the kind of base with your legs. So I'm not going to be able to do like a big sumo stance. That would be pointless to train for. Mm-hmm. When you're going to pull the stone off the ground, typically, you know, my hands are inside my feet. So I always deadlifted like that. You know, I said I did deficit deadlifts because, you know, you're basically pushing your hand up underneath the stone, trying to get the grip under there. So, you know, having the bar be, you know, regular height, the way mid shin again, doesn't do me any good. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, so I tried to get as close as I could to a lot of different things and, you know, tried rigging some stuff up and I could never, the idea was good, but like I attached a plate to like a pulley system, like a cable rower. And I was trying to grip the plate like this, mm-hmm. you know, and do rows to kind of try to simulate the hand grip. And, David Cardo, he actually like made something in his wood shop. He's the real Ron Swanson. but he made an attachment that I think he actually trained with, that I was super jealous of. But, you know, like I said, that's what we do as strength coaches, is how close can we get to the sport? How can we get as much transferability and apply what we're doing in the weight room and our training to what we're going to be experiencing in our event?
Mm. Yeah, we've got to train for the unknown. That's very true. Yeah, it's about figuring out, like you said, how to make this transfer to on-the-field play. And that's... Yeah, it's so unique that like you've got to be creative to lift up a stone.
Yes. you know, it's again, it kind of goes back to what, you know, I said about nutrition. Sometimes it's just the simple stuff works, and you know, just doing simple stuff is, you know, you can overthink things, and mm-hmm. you know, like I you know, sandbags was another thing that I kind of played around with, and because that was kind of close. But even then, you know, that's kind of dead weight and wasn't solid, so I struggled with that. You know, you can overthink things, just like the Instagram trainers do. Like, just because it looks awesome and it looks flashy doesn't mean it works. You know, simple is better. So, you know, a lot of what I did was started doing, especially towards the end, was, you know, about 3-4 weeks out, I quit doing barbell training at all. And I just went and lifted the stones that I had, and did different stuff with those, and tried to get, you know, as close to what I could do as possible. You know, and then even then, like the plan, you know, plans go, you know, awry and stuff. And cause I was going to try to do some other ones, but you know, it's still a vacation, and you know, we went to sightseeing and then got distracted because there's like three or four other ones that I was going to do. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I got the Inver one. That was the one I wanted to do for sure. And then we drove around and saw castles and stuff. And then, you know, I was towards the end of the day, I was just like, let's just go try this other one, the Dalwhinnie stone, and get that one. And, you know, we'll scratch some of the other ones where you've got to drive and walk a quarter mile up a dirt road and it's located under a tree. And so, you know, you might get dangerously close to having another stone episode, but David lifted like 8 of them. I think he lifted 8 in 2 days. Yeah, that's a feat of strength. So, you know, like I said, I'm not definitely not the stone expert. You know, he did a lot more than I did. But yeah, he was that, you know, he'd be a good one to talk to about that. So
have you used any like stone training for any of your athletes?
Every once in a while, like kind of like a fun day to break up monotony. I'll roll them out for the kids. And, you know, like one day in the spring, our skill players for football were doing like 7-on-7 stuff and throwing. And I told the linemen, I was like, hey, like, you know, you guys can go play with them. Or if you want, we can roll out the stones and we can go through some stuff. So they loved it. And then they came and kind of taught them a little bit and went over it. And then, you know, as you know, they kind of found out what I was doing and training for. So they would, you know, every once in a while they would come out and lift with me. A few of them would. And then I've got a little, it's 100-pound stone, and it's small, that like my girls' soccer team and my volleyball team, they'll try it. And it's pretty cool because the girls will shoulder it and, you know, They get more excited about stuff than some of the guys do. So when stuff goes in the weight room, so it's fun. And then like I'll have some of them. Some of the girls will be like, Coach, I'm going to get that stone. Like if they weren't able to shoulder it, or like end of the year, like let me try again. I'll shoulder it. So
that's awesome. That's cool because it's so different than you know, traditional stuff. Like that's, I don't know what it is, but there's like, just watching somebody pick up a heavy stone is like, man, like, I don't know if there's like some sort of primal thing that you're just like, oh, I want to lift that stone. Like,
I mean, it really is. It's a total body thing. You know, I think there is a little bit kind of like I said, it's, hey, that's a heavy thing, I'm going to go pick it up. But, you know, the thing that I really first started noticing when, you know, I started doing it and lifting with stones was it's different because it, you know, you'll consider certain lifts like a total body lift, but it's like, it's a total body lift. Like, it, you know, it's, you've got to squeeze, you know, you've actually got to squeeze it. So it's, you know, it's your upper body, your chest is sore, your abs get, you know, just destroyed, especially if you're extending up. And then, like after I did my stupid birthday workout, like it was like abs and lats. My abs and my lats were just on fire for like 4 days. Wow. And You know, I was kind of surprised. I thought my legs would, you know, I'd feel it more in my legs. But really, in all of the training that I did, like, it was never, I never felt like it was my legs and lower body that was the limiting factor. It was, I always felt like it was, like, my ability to, like, grip the stone with my upper body and, you know, I guess my inability to bench, like I don't like bench press, like I'm not good at it, so I don't like it. But you know, and it was kind of weird because it was like I felt like even though I was doing like a stone day would kind of start taking place of upper body days, like when I would come back and bench, I was like, man, like that weight was like really easy, and I haven't benched in like. I haven't done like a really true bench workout in like a week and a half, but like that weight was easy. But you know, if you think about it, you're still working all that, you know, all your upper body, and it was different. So it's something different, and you know, it's that was what I kept telling myself too. It's like it's 265. Like I know I can deadlift that. Like I know I can do it with a bar, but it's something different when you can't get your hands on it, or it's not, you know, a clean instrument or whatever, but
it's not so ergonomically designed to be efficiently lifted. Like that's half the fun, I think. So I thought about, you know, having you do the podcast like weeks if not months ago, but I was like, I was kind of selfish. I was like, no, I really want to, I want to wait till you get back so that we could discuss the stones. But
yeah, I mean, and you know, it's fun, and I love talking about it, but you know, I got plenty I can talk about. You can probably ask some of my athletes, like I can ramble like nobody's business. So, you know, that was fun, but you know, if you want to talk training high school athletes, let's go, man.
I thought we'd maybe spend like 10, 15 minutes talking about, you know, stones, and here we are almost an hour in. So,
do like a two-parter with me. I'm sorry. Like,
no, this is all good. This is,
like, if you want to hear about stones, start here. If you want to, actually learn, like listen to like how to train high school athletes, like start at the
57 minutes.
Yeah. Just go there. Like,
that's hilarious. So, with regards to training high school athletes, what do you consider the most important things to focus on for either performance or injury prevention? Like, do you have more of a focus with regards to those, or is it kind of you like to marry them? And
I think they go hand in hand. I mean, I think you're kind of fooling yourself if you think you're like, oh, like I'm training for performance and like this is injury prevention. It's like, well, no, it's like, it's all kind of the same. Like, you know, injury prevention, good technique, athletic performance. Like I think if you're doing it right, you're getting all of them at the same time. And, you know, it's just building good sound habits and not rushing it. I'm a barbecue guy. I love me some Texas barbecue. And that's kind of the analogy that I try to go with and remember is like, it's training an athlete and a high school athlete. It's like making good barbecue. It takes time. It takes a long time for the payoff, but at the end it's worth it. And I tried explaining that to athletes once, and I was like, you know, would you rather have really good barbecue or like a hot pocket? And they're like, hot pocket. It's like, no, like you don't understand. You know, anything, you know, it's a microwave. It's like not what you want. You know, it just takes time, and you've got to build on things, and you can't rush it. And that's one thing I really, really like about being at the high school level is the kids that come through and that have been there with, you know, since seventh grade and start in seventh grade. And there's not a lot of them because we're military, so kids are always in and out. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, like if a kid graduates and has been there at least in high school for 4 years with me, like the only lifting habits they know are probably the ones that I taught them. And that's really, really cool. You know, it's kind of fun too when, you know, somebody comes in and moves in or PCS is in and it's like, well, you know, do you know how to power clean? And then, no, what's that? Or, you know, like, do you know how to squat? Or, you know, do you have any idea what your squat max is? Or like, no, we didn't really do that. Or they'll say yes, and then it's like,
we'll see.
Let's step back, you know.
Yeah.
Let's put that down.
Uh-huh.
And let's start stand over here. So it's – and that's a fun part of it is just, you know, trying – and I think that's kind of strength and conditioning is, you know, taking your time, build the foundation, do it the right way, but also realize that the season is coming and – you know, you've got to get them prepared at some point to be out on the field. And it's kind of playing with that line of like rushing it, you know, how slow can you go, but you still have to be kind of fast and progressing them and being able to get in the weight room and actually do stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there are smarter strength coaches than me that might disagree and just say, hey, like, you know, do this, you know, stay with the PVC pipes or do this or stay here. And they might disagree, but I think at some point you do have to get them lifting and you have to put weight on the bar. And mm-hmm. I think I remember Joe Ken. I like a lot of what he says. And, you know, he said at one point, I think I heard him say, he's like, there's like three kind of lifters. There's corrosive, there's competent, and there's competitive. And you don't need your athletes to be competitive lifters, you just have to have them competent and mm-hmm. at least not corrosive. Mm-hmm. So at least get them to the point where they're not hurting themselves. So just get them to the point where, you know, they're getting that benefit out of what they're doing. So, you know, that's a lot of what it is just like, hey, when we squat, these are, you know, the three rules of the squat that I teach are heels in the ground, make sure your hips sink and keep your chest, you know, keep your chest up to where I can see your logo on your shirt. And I feel like that solves most problems if the kids are working on that. Now, mm-hmm. you know, there's mobility issues and flexibility issues that you've got to work on. But, you know, if you tell them those three things, they have an idea of what it should look like. And then yep. it's just personalizing it a little bit.
For sure. Yeah, I think, like you said, you can set things up so that they don't have to be excessively complex. Like if you're given a high school kid or a college kid 10 cues, and I find myself doing this quite a lot with some of my clients, I'm like, all right, I want you to focus on this. I want this knee to be doing this. And like, I'll give them like 10 things. And they're like, what am I doing? Like, yeah. what is the exercise that I'm doing? Cause it sounds like you're giving me 10 different exercises. And I'm like, okay, my bad. That was poor coaching. Let's reset. Yep. Three things, do this, and then if I notice something, I'll correct it. But most of the time, you give them the important stuff and then fix it as you go. Unless you're loading every single plate on the bar.
Right.
Like, you're not going to have some crazy, risky situation where you're going to be like, oh, don't do that. Oh.
Yeah.
Fix it as you go.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is like when I'm trying to teach somebody or go over something and, you know, they like the kid will just stop and like look at me like, what am I supposed to do? And it's like, you show me what you think you're supposed to do and then I'll coach you up. Like, let me see where you're at, you know,
yep.
you know, hey, you know, as usually I always start like with my freshmen is like, all right, there's no wrong answers here. Like, I'm going to say ready, go. And you drop into what you think athletic position is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hey, ready to go. And you'll see a bunch of different stuff. But a lot of times, like, that in itself to me, like, says, all right, like, if they get it on their first go, like, all right, you're probably going to be a pretty decent athlete. Like, mm-hmm. you've got something going for you. And then, you know, you can kind of watch and see. And then, you know, some of them, like, just freeze. And it's like, I can't help you unless you show me what you think it is. Like, you're not wrong. Like, I'm not going to get mad at you. And that's another thing with, especially with kids. It's like, I'm never going to get mad at a kid for not being able to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Olympic lift, when I start teaching them and going through progressions, it's like, hey, like, I will never be mad at you if you don't do an Olympic lift perfectly. I'll get upset and annoyed if you don't try. Mm-hmm. Like if you just flat out refuse to do anything and you're lazy, like that's when I'll get aggravated. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're trying, I'm never going to get mad at you. Whether it's the best looking thing in the world or the worst looking thing, like I don't care what weight's on the bar. I need to see you try. Yep. So, and I think that's a lot of it is just giving them confidence that it's okay to mess up, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the nice thing about a lot of movements or exercises like the squat, like the deadlift, like the Olympic lifts, you're going to get better even if it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, you're not going to do it perfect. Like,
right.
So you're still going to make progress. You're still going to get stronger, even if it's not 100%, you know, executed. So, yeah, I think explaining that to some of the high school and middle school kids that I work with, like, sometimes they'll get really frustrated, like, because I tend to be pretty strict on on certain things.
Yeah, well, they're like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Right, but they'll be like, I'm not doing this. I know this isn't right. And I'm like, you're right. It's not perfect. Right now, it doesn't have to be perfect. Let's just fix this one thing. Let's focus on that. And then next time we do this, we'll see how that's looking. And then we'll add the next step. We'll add the next layer of working towards, like you said, being a competent lifter. It doesn't have to be perfect. You're not a power lifter. You're not an Olympic lifter. You play this sport. We just need to apply the type of stress that's going to allow you to excel in your sport. So I have to catch myself because sometimes I get, you know, because I'm like, if you do it perfect, your risk of injury is way down. So if you do it this way, maybe your injury risk is going to go up. It's like, okay, like I've got to. You got to keep everything kind of in balance, and
right.
That's a constant struggle. So, but so do you have all of your high school athletes lifting on similar programs, or is it a little more like, is it kind of like everybody is training essentially the same way because you just want to focus on athleticism, or is it a little more sport specific or position specific or?
It's all pretty similar, you know, and I'll hear about it. I usually hear about it from a couple of the female sports. It was like, oh, you're training us like football players. It's like, no, I'm training like athletes, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. athletes are athletes, mm-hmm. You know, so it's all pretty similar. I keep it all the same, cause we've got a lot of kids that play multiple sports. So I want it to be somewhat, you know, seamless. Depending on who they're lifting with, I would say I don't necessarily, it's not really sport specific. I would say it's because to me, if you're doing sport specific stuff, just go practice the sport. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that's not what the weight room is about. You can, the closer and closer you get, you might as well just be doing skill work. So I will emphasize different things, I guess. I'm blanking on the word, but like with my soccer team, I like the tier system. I use a version of it, but with my soccer teams, and I don't bench them that much. Like I might bench them once, you know, it's not never a primary lift. It's never the first thing that we're going to do in the weight room. They might bench once every 2.5 weeks, you know, they'll do incline or they'll do overhead press, but it's just not a concern. I don't need my soccer players to bench a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll do it a little bit more with the guys just because they're high school guys and they still want to bench press. You know, it's more like I will eliminate exercises or I will focus on things that I, you know, that are scary. Like I don't do a whole lot. I don't do overhead pressing with my baseball guys. Mm-hmm. You know, football and soccer get more neck work and neck training built in, whereas you know, my cross country and track teams will do more kind of like quad stretching and stuff. I'll try to work that in. It just kind of depends on, like I said, it's not really sport specific. It's just like, hey, like you guys probably need a little bit more of this. Mm-hmm. you guys probably need a little bit more of this. I know y'all don't, you know, and then it's also respecting the wishes of the coach a little bit, you know, like we'll talk and we'll have dialogues and it's like, hey, what do you want to see from your teams? What do you think you need to work on? And what do you think is important? And, you know, if we have a disagreement, like we'll talk about it and figure out, you know, like, well, hey, what if we do this and this? But ultimately, like, it's, you know, the kind of way that I look at it, like I'm going to give them my 2 cents and like think, hey, this is what we need to do. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's their team, you know. I'm there to help them. So, you know, like I use baseball and I have a great baseball coach. He's very supportive. You know, he's like, hey, like off season, like let's bench. You know, we'll do a lot of bench press. You know, can we just back off in, you know, in season? And so, yeah, you know, I know some baseball guys like, no, I don't want to do any bench press. Like, I don't want to do any barbell stuff. But it's like, hey, like, great. Like, let's do some bench press, you know, off season. As the season gets closer, like, we'll start doing more weighted push-ups. And I would do dumbbells, but I don't have enough dumbbells to go around. That's that's one of the big things is, you know, kind of limited with what we've got and team size. So.
So how do you motivate your athletes and how do you get the most out of them?
I guess I just I hope I do, period. You know, just reminding them at the end of the day that, you know, they are choosing to play the sport. You know, they're choosing to be here. They're choosing to give up their time doing other things to be, you know, out on the field, to be competing. To remind them, you know, reminding them that at the end of the day, like, you know, you're gonna have to go out there and perform. And it might be a little cheesy, but one thing I kind of started finding myself kind of leaning back on and going to is like layers of competition and like the first layer or first level of competition is you're usually competing with yourself, you know, hey, like get out of bed, or, you know, show up to the weight room or go to the open weight room or go to practice or whatever, you know, you're competing with yourself. And then you start competing with your teammates, you know, or your training partners and, you know, like you're competing with them to get better and to win a spot, you know, with playing time or on the team. And then after that, the final part of it is you compete against other people. And just, you know, trying to remind them that you've got to hit those three different levels. You got to compete with yourself. You got to shut off that voice in your head that says, hey, it's 100 degrees out, you know, but I've got to show up in the middle of summer for 2 hours and work when it'd be really easy to sleep in. And then it's like, hey, we've got to get out here with your teammates. And, you know, I'm not going on the field for you guys. Like, you guys have to get each other here. And then, you know, it's just reminding them of those things. And I like to think it works. I don't know if it does or not. You know, and another thing is I do my best to try to show, like, that, hey, I still lift. I get out there and I try to make it a point to, you know, get my lifts in the morning. Sometimes some mornings are better than others, but, you know, to be able to demonstrate drills, maybe not as fluidly as some of our athletes can, or I might need to take a water break after doing a 5-yard sprint, but, you know, to at least be able to show that, like, hey, I can at least demonstrate and show you what, like, I feel like it should be close to. You know, but I think, man, that's the big thing is like how you motivate an athlete. Like that's, you know, that's the big piece of the puzzle. You know, weight training's easy compared to that. So.
Yep. Well, I think the stereotype for especially high school and college strength coaches is just yelling all the time and like saying degrading or demeaning things, and it's like that's not a good way to get, you know, your athletes to put in work for themselves, for you, for the other coaches, for each other. Like, so I think having like some sort of built-in competitive structure is useful. So
just realized how dark it was getting on my screen. like the talking shadow, like
you're turning into the Dark Knight.
Yeah. I was looking at the little screen and I was like, man, I look like one of those, like where they're interviewing somebody that's like anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Just gotta change your voice a little bit.
Yeah. So that was one of the great things, you know, talking about like the screaming coach stereotype, is that's what I loved about, I think I had a pretty blessed and fortunate like upbringing as a strength coach. Like that was my, you know, working with Charlie, like he is a loud, energetic guy, but he's not a screamer or a yeller. Like he's more of a, you know, he's loud when things go right. He's loud when he gets excited and, you know, he's getting hyped for you. But it's like, I think while I was there, like the few times I ever saw him like really get onto the team, it was more like, what are you doing? You know, like very matter of fact, like, guys, let's get it straight. And Hefner, you know, Jeremy Hefner was the same way. Like, again, very energetic, very loud, but, you know, wasn't a screamer or yeller. It was more like, hey, like, let's get excited that something good happened. But, you know, it wasn't just yelling. She was Kelly Sprigg. She's now Dr. Kelly Long at U of H. She was awesome, too. Like, you know, it was just like, hey, this is what we're going to do. And what, you know, this is what the expectations are. And I loved it because that's me. Like I'm not a get in your face, you know, yell guy. I've been there. But it's usually a very big boiling point for me to actually blow up. And usually it's, you know, I think the kids kind of notice it when something's going on. Cause I'll stop talking I'll give them a chance to realize like what's going on and it'll kind of build and then I'll shut things, you know, I'll like, hey, like guys, we got to fix this problem.
Yeah.
I had some good mentors to kind of model after that, you know, my personality and who I am kind of synced up with how they were. So I got to see like, I can be myself and be a good strength coach.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to fall into that stereotype. I remember, I can't remember who I was talking about this with, but I think maybe it was Mandy or I don't remember. Anyway, it was like the one time early on, with our class with Charlie, he gave us some assignment and like half the class just like didn't really take it seriously. He didn't yell at all, but we were all just like, oh my, like the only point when he raised his voice was at the very end. He was like, get out of my weight room. Like, but like up until that, it was just like,
I'm trying to think, I feel like I kind of remember it. Maybe I just blocked it out.
It was intense, but like, it wasn't a yelling thing. Like he was just like he just kind of lined us all up and he was just like, this was the assignment. And then you'd like call your name and be like, you didn't take this part seriously at all.
Oh, I think I and, like, remember.
It was early like on. Yeah. And it was just like after that, nobody had any issues at all. Like everybody was like, I think we just weren't really sure how serious things were because it was like, we're in the weight room. It's like a beautiful weight room.
Yeah.
We're lifting. We've got loud music. We're like, so
most of what we were doing was hands-on, and this was like the first thing he had kind of had us like write out something.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, I think I do remember that. Sorry, Charlie.
Yeah. But it was an intense.
That was. I'm sure I've done. I know I've done more to aggravate him. So I just try to block it out. It's the growing pains of being an intern and a strength coach. Like, I look back and I was like, God, like why did he keep me around? Like why does he still send me text messages? Like why does he still talk to me? I was off. But
that's hilarious.
Yeah, I miss it, man. That was a lot of fun. You know, being in that environment. And then I think one of the coolest things was once Jeremy Hefner got there, I remember it was like this one kind of like, you know, I felt like it was like a TV show or something, but it was like, I remember talking to Charlie about something, and you know, at that point I had been working with Charlie for a while, and then when Hefner came in, you know, he had a different philosophy, and but it was just, I just remember this one, like, I don't know if it was weeks or maybe I just changed it in my mind, but it was like, I remember talking to Charlie about something and then like walking next door and into Hefner's office and asking him a question and getting like a completely different response and answer, but like it worked. And then like going back into Charlie's office and asking him another question and then like going back and forth and getting like two very different answers to the same problem. And it just like, it really helped, like it really helped open my mind and open my eyes that like, you know, there are a lot of ways to skin a cat, and there's a lot of ways you can do this. And it's just, you know, just because traditionally this is what you think of when you're doing something, like you can get more out of an exercise or you're doing more than you might think you're doing. And it was just really cool. And it kind of opened my eyes and like, hey, like I need to read some of this, you know, I need to read some of this coach and I need to learn some more about him. And, you know, I think it was when Hefner came in that, I kind of really started getting into Mike Boyle's stuff and reading a lot of his stuff because of some things he shared with me. But it was just this really cool, like very different philosophies, accomplishing the same goals. And getting to see that very early on helped me tremendously. And it was just being able to go back and forth between those guys. So,
yeah. And like, they don't butt heads. Like, they get along really well, which is really cool to see. Yeah. Like you don't have to have the same, you know, philosophies or viewpoints, like you said, to get the job done.
Yeah.
So speaking of, that's a perfect segue. So what are you currently learning?
Oh, what am I currently learning? I've kind of been selfishly, I kind of dove into stone training for so long that I kind of shut down a lot of stuff. And that's what I'm kind of coming back from now. And like, I was sitting on the couch the other day and Ashley was talking to me and I was just like zoned out, and she's like, what's wrong? I was like, it's over. Like, summer's over. We had our trip. We had our wedding. We had our trip. Like, I was looking forward to it. And then like we got back and we had like a couple days where we couldn't do anything. And then I was like, because of the UIL rules, and I was sitting there and I was like, I go back, you know, going back to work, and like, it's only going to get like worse from here because we're like, like summer, you know, we have 2 weeks left of summer workouts. And then it's like football season's here and in service. So it's like, we got 2-a-days, we got in service, and the season starts, and it's like, man, summer's over. And I've been struggling with that, like lifting wise too, because, you know, like diet starts on Monday. So it's like, I've got, like, I've had this goal, you know, that I was training for. And now it's like, I don't have that. Like, I'm trying to find that goal, that's motivation to get up and go to the weight room, aside from, oh, like, I know I need to work out and I want to work out. I mean, I do enjoy working out, but it's like, I've had that drive and that focus for so long. And it's like, I've got to find a new one aside from just like, oh, I want to lose weight, because, you know, that's constant. But, you know, I've been meaning to kind of trying to challenge myself to read more, like, you know, I've read Conscious Coaching by Brett Bartholomew. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to get back into it and reread it again and kind of process it a little bit more, because, you know, we talked about earlier, like, it's finding ways to motivate. Mm-hmm. That's a big key of it. Not that I have all of the answers to strength training figured out, but, you know, that's such a huge part of it. I could probably name a bunch of things. Like, I've been reading Lane Norton's book a little bit on Fat Loss Forever. That's not really helping my athletes any. But
personal development.
Yeah. And then I've been meaning to get back into, I've had it forever. Supple Leopard by
Kelly Starrett.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of like bits and pieces, but, again, selfishly, like my mobility and getting beat up and trying to find better ways of taking care of myself and needing to go through that a little bit more. So, mm-hmm. I feel bad. I've got a lot of things that I've been meaning to do, but like I said, it's.
Yeah, I caught you at a busy time, man.
I mean, I've been trying, I've been enjoying my summer. I'll be real, like not really doing anything. Like I've been enjoying what my summer, been prepping for the wedding and the honeymoon. And, I am going to I always get the acronym mixed up, but the National High School Strength and Conditioning Association, they're doing their Texas State Clinic this weekend, this Saturday down in Deer Park. So I'll be going to that. And there's some really good speakers, Kyle Keese and Monty Sparkman, I believe, are speaking. And, that's a good time. It's all, all high school strength coaches. And those are some smart guys that I have stolen a lot of stuff from. But it's just always trying to find little things here and there and realizing that, there is a lot of trash out there, like on Instagram, but there are some really good follows that you can pick up and, all some stuff. And, yeah, man, I wish I had a better answer, but I'll be real. Like I've been lazy. So
I think you're there's seasons for everything, right? Yeah. Like you were building up to quite a bit and, your like work during the high school, like school year, like it's intense. So there's times where it's appropriate not to do a whole lot, to relax.
I'm good at that, so.
That's awesome. So, how can people reach out to you and follow you or ask you questions?
Best way is either Instagram and Twitter, probably Instagram more than Twitter. I've got two accounts. My personal account is at WG Skelton. It's a lot of pictures of my dog and barbecue, but every once in a while I post a training picture, but it's usually not that exciting. I feel bad for I have like strength and conditioning coach in my title or my bio, so I'm sure I get some followers and then they like follow me and like, why am I following this guy? I don't put a lot of stuff on there. It's not like if you follow me, you're going to get a lot of good stuff, but I'll be glad to talk shop or answer questions. And then I have at night, KNIGHT underscore strength. That's one I run for my kids and my athletes. And I tell my athletes to follow me on there. And, I try to post stuff. And again, I'm horrible at it. I have tons of videos of my kids doing drills and stuff. And then like, I'll take all these videos and then I'll forget to post them. But
yeah, I know how that is.
That's and that one, it's a lot of stuff. If you follow me on Twitter, on at night underscore strength, it's a lot of stuff that I want them to read and I want them to see. And hopefully they realize like, oh, it's not just Coach Skelton saying stuff, like other coaches are saying this too. And then on Instagram, I try to post as much stuff as for them as possible and about them or give them information. So, I'll be glad to answer questions. I don't think I'm like a super exciting follow.
Hey, I think you've got video of you, shouldering the Inver Stone, right?
I don't know if I put the video up or not. I made a post, about it, but, yeah, I don't know. It's just,
alrighty.
Yeah. That'd be the best way. Maybe I did. I don't remember if I posted it or not. I know I posted some pictures. I don't know if I put the video up, but
gotcha.
Yeah. The belly was hanging out and I was just, yeah. I'm built for comfort right now. I'm not built for speed. So, I was actually trying to protect you because I was like, oh man, like
nutrition coach. Like, I'm not looking very, very coached up right now. So,
yeah, well, you're not stage ready yet, but we'll get you there. So, I think we're losing a little light here. So, we'll,
yeah,
it's all good.
I was just realizing that.
No worries. Well, we're about towards the end anyway. So, you have any concluding remarks? Any quotes you find meaningful, or any pieces of information you think would be good for anyone watching or listening to hear? You can say no. You'd be the first one, but
I would say, you know, like I mentioned, you know, earlier, like, realize that there's multiple ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get so locked in. Don't get locked into your way. I think it's a fine line. Don't get locked into doing things your way. But also believe in what you do. Whether, you know, if you're a strength coach or a personal trainer, there's a reason why you got the job. There's a reason why they come to you. And stick to your guns, but don't be so hard-headed that you're not willing to change and adapt. And then, you know, iron sharpens iron, you know, and that's always a good one for me. You know, that's what this is. That's what it's about.
Yep.
I would say those would probably be my two. I would also apologize for the lighting. it was like the sunlight was shining right through when we started. And then I guess an hour and a half later, it got really dark. So,
it's all good.
Weird shadowy effects going on. So
everybody listening on iTunes is completely
that's probably the preferred way to do it. You need to put a disclaimer on the video, like, please just listen.
That's awesome. Well, that pretty much takes care of it. Garson, thank you so much for taking the time. Thanks for sharing some wisdom and some awesome stories about lifting up stones. I found it pretty awesome. So
awesome. I appreciate it. You know, if you decide to have me back, you know, we can actually talk high school athletes. Like, like I said, if at any point any of my athletes ever find this and listen to it, they'll be like, yeah, that's Coach Skelton. He just rambles. Like, he'll talk about nothing.
We talked about a lot of somethings, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So awesome. But yeah, no, I'll definitely have you back on, because there, I don't know too many other high school strength coaches. So, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of good ones out there, man. You know, probably better than me. And it's interesting, because that's, I kind of feel like that's how a lot of the field is going, where the high school level is just growing and growing and growing.
It's getting better.
So that's good. You know, it kind of breaks some of the old school training, you know, styles, but
for sure. Well, I think you're a little too hard on yourself with regards to your quality. They don't just let anybody, you know, through Baylor. And then, like you said, if you're there, you probably deserve to be there. So
yeah, no, I know. There's always
exceptions. I'm not going to name any names, but I think you and I both know. Just kidding.
So,
anyway,
yeah.
All right, man. We'll have you on again in the future, and we'll be able to.
It was fun.
Yeah, thank you. All right, y'all. Thanks for watching and listening, and stay tuned for the next episode, and go follow Garson.